Been down so long, it looks like up to me. Or is it? That's the take on our Long View segment today. Our political analyst, Neil Milner, joins us this morning. Hi, Neil.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Well, so are things looking up?
Well, up in some ways. There's some good writing that suggests why we should be optimistic. I mean, some of it is obvious if you follow the news at all about more vaccines available. But there's been an interesting piece in a magazine called Dispatches, a daily thing, which is a fact-based conservative magazine, which matches some of the other writing by people who don't get identified as conservatism, saying there are reasons to be optimistic, and the problem with not being optimistic is that it makes it harder to recover. It makes people less willing to get the vaccine. The information about the vaccine that's optimistic is one, and this is from Scott Linsacum and then David Leonhard in the New York Times. One is that the vaccine is becoming more and more available, and President Biden's recent information about that. Secondly, it definitely seems effective and probably more effective that those of us who have it are much less likely to be able to spread the virus somewhere else than was originally thought. It also reduces the seriousness of the disease and so on. So that's the vaccine side that people agree on, that more and more people are talking about. The economic side is that the economy is starting to recover. Jobs are starting to come back. Things look pretty good in some areas, like even manufacturing here. One of the interesting things is that there seems to be an increase in people starting new businesses. I would guess it has to do with two things, one of which is people who were laid off in some industries, like the tourist industry, trying to figure out another way to go. And the second thing is that they're taking over, to some extent, the infrastructure and the ashes of people who lost their businesses or went out of business in the other one. That's a real interesting one that some folks have talked about as being optimistic. Okay, so that's the side of it. And as David Leonhard says, we have to quit being vaccine alarmists because the data suggests there's no reason for it, and that by being vaccine alarmist, essentially you reduce the possibility of recovering from it. So all that goes along with this thing like we can open schools more and the CDC has offered more guidelines and so on. So that's fine. There are two things to understand, one of which is that this is tremendously in a state of flux, that the virus could still surprise us, and because there is what I call political flux. And that's really the second thing. You know, if you read the stuff about why we should be optimistic, you know, and I'm not talking about the kind of hoo-has, you know, mask violates my freedom kind of stuff. I'm talking about people who look at this in a more serious way. It's presented in a kind of rational political world, you know, that here are the reasons that we should start being optimistic. But in the real, this is still very much about politics. Science has become political. People listen to people who are members of their own political parties. The states that are getting rid of mask mandates, for example, Texas and Mississippi, big surprise, they're Republican states. And so you have this kind of political overlay continuing, and the kind of doubts about the importance of science continue to affect the dynamics here. So that even if there is an optimistic side, which I think there is, you always have to put it in the context of how people behave. Not the least of which, of course, is that still, even if you have the vaccines available, to get people to take them is still somewhat of an issue and is still being fought about in other places.
Right. I mean, there are still a lot of unknowns. You know, we just had the news about the third vaccine rollout, but then yesterday the Catholic Church was saying, not so fast, you know, these were this is research out of stem cells. And
Johnson & Johnson one,
yes.
Yeah.
So are, you know, is that going to affect people's acceptance of this vaccine, even though it is available?
Well, I wish I could answer that. All we can say about this is that persuading people is both an art and a science. And it seems to have to do a lot with the successful programs of getting people vaccinated seem to have a lot to do not with just making it available and making big places available, but a lot of grassroots work. West Virginia is a good example where they just decided, you know, it's a state that's isolated, a lot of poor people, you can't rely on the internet, we're going to do grassroots sort of thing. So the answer I'm going to give to that question is that the answer is unpredictable. The fact that I'm saying it's unpredictable reminds us that optimism or pessimism is very much mitigated by the way that people are actually going to behave in reaction to this. And the people like Scott Linsigum in Dispatches and David Leonhardt in the New York Times are essentially trying to affect people's behavior by giving good, sound reasons why you can be more optimistic. But giving people good, sound reasons to be optimistic through the media is not exactly a certain formula for success.
You know, I guess if you think back that this month marks like a year, right, since this whole emergency landed on our doorstep, you know, I guess I can't help think of that cliche, too, right? You can't see the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
So while you're in it, you're not really sure what you're in.
Well, and there's really two issues there. One of us, and I can feel it in myself, one side is that you're so used to being in the trees that you worry about going out into the forest, right? That's the one thing, and that has to do with becoming overly cautious. When I speak personally, I'm still a little reluctant to do things that I know are much safer to do now that I'm vaccinated. The other side, and I call this the Texas governor side or the Florida governor side, is, hey, it's the forest. You know, get out there. Do your stuff. Both of those things make the response to COVID more problematical. And you notice we haven't even talked about the schools yet, and that's a whole separate issue. Because on the one hand, there is a lot more data and political pressure to open schools, even in areas that, you know, have been very cautious about mandates. And at the same time, there is still a lot of complexity and a lot of resistance. The CDC recent guidelines, if you look at those guidelines, it suggests that county by county, if you're thinking about schools that should be open according to the CDC guidelines, there's probably a sixth of the counties in the country that should be open, that could be open full-time in person, including three in Hawaii. And they only make up 4% of the population. And then the rest, a good portion of them can be open up hybrid and so on. The interesting thing, of course, is that even people who are in the field say that the CDC guidelines may be a little bit too strict, like 6 feet. It doesn't have to be 6 feet, 3 feet. But the point is that our response, the school response to COVID, is like the response to virtually everything else in this pandemic. It's state and it's local, which means there's a lot of variation.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm just going to say that I'm cautiously optimistic. How's that?
Yeah, I am. Yes, okay. I am too. Cautiously optimistic that people understood what I said today.
Okay. All right. Thanks so much,
take
Neil.
Take care, Catherine. Yeah. Bye.
That was Neil Milner, retired professor of political science. He joins us as our contributing editor with his segment, The Long View.